Thank you for the introduction. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Sumit Sharma. I'm a PhD student at Texas A&M University. I'll be talking about impact of biofuel-induced land use change on evapotranspiration and energy balance dynamics at different temporal scales in the southern U.S. Cotton Belt region. For my talk, Dr. Raj and Dr. Cassie and Dr. Maas are my co-authors. So if you wonder where the Cotton Belt region is, it stretches from California to the Carolinas. In the east, those pigmented polygons represent the cotton-producing areas, and as you can see, in the area of our interest, it's quite intensive. The darker the color, the more cotton production over there it is. So this area is also called Southern Great Plains, semi-arid, susceptible to periodic drought. Those red pixels, they represent the cotton farming. Other major crops include winter wheat, corn, grain sorghum. Now this area lies over Ogallala Aquifer. More than 95% water produced from Ogallala Aquifer is used for irrigation purposes. With excessive use of extraction of water from Ogallala Aquifer, the water table has declined to significant levels in many parts. As a result, we are looking at decreasing acreage of irrigated areas. In fact, there are some rules which are in place to regulate water extractions from the aquifer. Now, this area also holds potential to produce bioenergy crops. And if that happens, we might be looking at a potential land use change from major cropping system, which is cotton, to bioenergy crops. We know land use change can modify carbon evapotranspiration and energy balance dynamics of a region, which gives us two questions. If this land use change happens, what is the nature and scale of water energy partitioning dynamics of bioenergy crops, but compared to major land use changes in this region? And will the bioenergy crops have the advantage of water conservation over cotton in the area? Which brings us to the goal of our study, which is to investigate the water and energy flux associated with potential change in land use from cotton to second generation bioenergy crops in the Southern Cotton Belt region using ecovariance method. So we set up our experiments in four sites. Since we were in cotton country, there was no difficulty in finding irrigated and dryland cotton fields. But it's the specific biomass crops like switchgrass or miscanthus are seldom grown on, I don't know if anybody grows in that area on large scale. So our bioenergy crop candidate was high biomass forest sorghum. We found a producer who was growing it. We wanted to compare this sorghum with some other C4 grass. We found an old world blue stem which was grown nearby. We put our ecovariance systems in these fields. Except dryland cotton, all three fields were equipped with center pivot irrigation systems. But old world blue stem and dryland cotton were never irrigated. So what is ecovariance system? It actually includes two main components. A sonic anemometer, which measures wind velocity in X, Y, and Z direction, and also air temperature. And infrared gas analyzer, which measures carbon dioxide and water vapor molecules in the air. Using these two instruments, we measured carbon dioxide, water vapor, and sensible heat flux. We installed these instruments at least about 2 meter height from the surface. And these are fast responding instruments, and we were making 10 measurements per second. How does this thing work? So as the wind blows over Earth's surface, the surface roughness breaks its laminar flow and creates eddies. We measure carbon dioxide and water molecules in these eddies. So CO2 concentration measured at one time step is multiplied with the simultaneous vertical wind velocity component. And we do it over time, in our case for 30 minutes, and take an average. This average is actually the flux, the 30 half hourly flux. And just like we do it for carbon dioxide, we do it for water and sensible heat flux. Water flux also represents the latent heat flux of evapotranspiration. In addition to these fluxes, we measured air temperature and relative humidity, soil heat flux, net radiation, photosynthetically active radiation, solar irradiance, soil moisture, soil temperature, and rainfall. Once you put all these instruments together, this is how the site looks like. This is our old world blue stem during non-growing season. Now, Since we are making 10 measurements per second, we have large amount of data, and it's stored in binary format. We use software called LoggerNet to change that format to ASCII format and feed this data to AdiPro software, which computes half-hourly fluxes for us. Now, during rainfall, snowfall, or maintenance, we lose some data. These occasional gaps are filled using meteorological data available. And the final product we get are half-hourly fluxes. For example, on your y-axis, you see latent and sensible heat, and on x-axis is the 30-minute time interval. Now, we also have energy balance components. Our main source of energy is the radiation coming from sun. Some of it is reflected back. So whatever we have is net radiation. This available energy has to be partitioned into some other forms. So it can be into latent heat of evapotranspiration, or it can be lost in form of sensible heat, or it can be lost in soil. All these components should add to compensate the net radiation, but it seldom happens. Usually it ranges from 70 to 90%. In addition to the energy balance, we also calculated Bowman ratio, which is ratio of sensible heat to latent heat. And also it tells us the which feature is dominating when it comes to energy loss or energy partitioning. Once we have that, I will come to the results. We conducted this study in 2013, 14, and 15. The precipitation, average precipitation for 14 years was 416 millimeter. 2013 received lower precipitation. 14 and 15 received higher precipitation than the average precipitation. But most of the precipitation in 14 and 15 was concentrated during early growing season, May and June. Now, for eddy covariance systems data, it is very important to check the quality of your data. And one way to check it is energy balance closure. So on the y-axis is latent heat and sensible heat sum, and on x-axis it's net radiation subtracted soil heat flux. If the slope is 1, it means 100% energy has been compensated. But like I said, 70 to 90% is also acceptable. So in all our fields for all 3 years, the energy balance ranged from 76% to 90%, which gave me confidence about my data. Also, I looked into the energy partitioning during the non-growing season when there was no crop growing. The top graph is Old World bluestem, the bottom is sorghum. And the y-axis is energy components, where red circles represent net radiation, blue latent heat, green sensible heat, and maroon soil heat. The x-axis is the time, it's 30-minute interval. As you can see, during the non-growing season in both crops, sensible heat was the dominating flux through which the system was losing energy. Similarly, in dryland cotton and irrigated cotton, it was sensible heat which was dominating during non-growing season. However, when we do in growing season, it can switch. For example, I'm showing here the grassland for the same year, different days. From 171 to 179, it's the latent heat which is dominating. From day of the year 222 to 228, sensible heat tends to dominate. We have seen this trend in most of our in all of our crops. So we plotted Bowman ratio against soil moisture to see what's happening. So we see as you see on the y-axis Bowman ratio, and on the x-axis soil moisture, it's percent volumetric water content. So as the volumetric water content tends to go down, it's the sensible heat that tends to take over the energy partitioning. That's how the system. Since sorghum and irrigated cotton, they were irrigated, it was latent heat which was dominating. And for Old World bluestem and dryland cotton, it was the sensible heat which was dominating on many days. In dryland cotton, it kind of shows the trend, but that's a lot of scatter and needs further investigation. So I will leave with that. But in addition to that, we also looked into daily evapotranspiration. In 2013, the top graph shows irrigated cotton and green circles, and dryland cotton in blue circles. y-axis is evapotranspiration in millimeter per day, and x-axis is day of the year. 2013, we didn't receive enough rainfall. The dryland cotton, it died, it failed. The farmer plowed it, got his insurance money. So in 2014, the irrigated cotton field, he replanted it. It survived and it kept irrigating it. We see some areas where the evapotranspiration is higher than dryland cotton because he was irrigating it. On the lower graph, it's the blue circles are represent the oval bluestem grassland, and the red ones are sorghum. So sorghum, for most part, was emitting more, doing more evapotranspiration because it was irrigating, more water was available to it. So it was very straightforward. In addition, we looked into the seasonal cumulative evapotranspiration. Sorghum and irrigated cotton, since they were irrigated, they were the highest, followed by old world bluestem and dryland cotton. They were not very different. And water use efficiency, we looked into this. And I used gross primary production, which we measured using our adecovariance data to calculate water use efficiency. So it's grams carbon accumulated per millimeter of water that's lost. And sorghum registered the highest water use efficiency, followed by old-world bluestem, and irrigated cotton and dryland were lagging. Of course, they are both C4 plants. So in conclusion, what if the Southern Great Plains, the major land use in Southern Great Plains, is replaced by bioenergy crops? It will have significant effects on the regional weather by affecting energy dynamics. And if irrigated cotton is replaced by dryland bioenergy grass feed stocks, it can significantly increase the sensible heat and reduce the amount of water vapor being released into the atmosphere through ET. If irrigated cotton is replaced by irrigated biomass sorghum, there may not be significant changes in ET because they are both irrigated. However, sorghum has shorter growing season than cotton, which may increase the sensible heat flux from the sorghum fields when it's not growing. But can be reduced if sorghum is allowed to regrow for the second harvest. With that, I would like to acknowledge my committee members, the farmers I worked with, and my student worker, and this project was funded by NIFA. Thank you all, and I will be glad to take some questions. We did. Yes, sir. So the soil heat flux were at 8 centimeters. So we calculated the soil, the heat storage within that depth. Yes.